Well, he was known on the air as Cal Stewart, but his real name is Cal Bullwinkle, and he was the program director at WoWo for many years. First of all, welcome to the history of WoWo.com.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
And what years were you at the radio station?
Well, let's see. I went to WoWo in 1952 from Benton Harbor. I was an announcer and MC type of thing up in Benton Harbor at a radio station. And I went down to WoWo. Yeah, it was 1952.
And you were there until when?
1965.
And were you the program director the entire time, or did you come
as an
announcer?
I started as a disc jockey and a booth announcer, and when I got there, we were still a network affiliate, so we were doing just about station breaks, period. Then all of a sudden, they decided to leave the network and become an independent station, and the program manager said, almost said it this way, on Monday, you're all disc jockeys. And everybody said, what do we do with that? He said, well, you play records and try to be funny and don't repeat the same record more than once an hour. And that's how it got started. That I would say, and let's see, that went about 2 years after I got there. And then they said, Bullwinkle, we can't use that name on the air. We come up with something else. So I said, well, my wife's name was Stewart. Okay, you're going to be Cal Stewart. That sounds good. And that's actually the way that happened.
So it sounds like there wasn't a lot of pre-planning when they made the switch from network to independent.
Theoretically, if it was 1 week or one weekend, he brought us together on a Friday and said, starting next week, you're all disc jockeys.
What was that like, that whole switch? When you switched from network to independent and went live, was it rock and roll at that time, or was it more of standards-type music?
More standard-type music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Mitch Millers and the... oh, God, I can't even recall some of the names, the Ray Anthonys and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And don't play that record more than once every hour, and all sorts of rules and regulations.
Were you basically choosing your own music, though?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, we're choosing our own music. In fact, yeah, we had to choose our own music, and I forget who put all the music there because they never had that much when we were just doing station breaks and a little bit of news during network time.
So was
somebody got a bunch of records and said, go. Yeah.
Was Sam DeVincent involved with the music library then?
Sam DeVincent was very much involved with that. I think he was our music director at the time.
Yeah, well, he was a music librarian for many, many years, and and I knew Sam well in later years.
Sam was great. But yeah, that's what happened. We started being disc jockeys. I had a little different angle. I was on in the morning with the farm director, and then when I got through being on the farm show, I think they did a newscast, and then I came back as a disc jockey and went from... I think 9 to 11 or something like that in the morning.
Now, when was Bob Sievers on at that time?
Oh, Bob Sievers was on early with Jay Gould at 6 o'clock. He did a show before the farm show, I think, and then he did the farm show, and then I came on at, I think, 9 o'clock, and he came back in at 12:30 to do a Man on the Street show. He did a Man on the Street for 15 minutes at 12:30.
One moment, please.
One moment, please. Exactly right. One moment, please. Oh, yeah, then my wife was just reminding me that Jay Gould got involved with the Heifer Project at that particular time.
What was the Heifer Project?
Well, he started it, taking animals down to St. Lucia, I think it was, an island in the Caribbean, helping the people down there to get started in agriculture.
Huh.
Yeah, pennies. Oh, we had penny pitches and all sorts of penny things to try to raise money for Jay Gould.
Now, the Little Red Barn, that was in existence when you got to WoWo, or did that name come along in that show later?
No, I think that Little Red Barn was already there when I got there. The Jay and Bob were doing it in the morning, if I'm not mistaken. In fact, then we had a lady doing a lady show, Jane Weston, at 9:30. In fact, that was part of my job before we got into this all disc jockey thing. I would be the announcer on her morning cooking show or whatever it was she did. And we had a live organist and that sort of thing. It's kind of fun.
What was it like, the transition from the standards music to rock and roll? Was that a gradual transition, or did they just do the same thing? One day they said, we're going to switch.
It was a one-day thing, and I think I may have been the first one on my show in the morning to play something like that. And it was Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley.
Wow.
And from then on, we were a rock and roll station. And off we went. Maybe it was Bob Sievers, but I think it was me that played the first one. Then, as far as I went, our program manager...
Was that Guy Harris?
Yeah, Guy Harris. I think he left and went to Arizona or somewhere, and the general manager just said, hey, you're the program manager now. Something like that, anyway. And I went off the air and became a program manager.
And you were the program manager for how many years?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I went to Philadelphia in 1965, so I must have been maybe 5 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm. In that time, do you remember some of the people you hired?
Oh, well, some of them, we were already there. Marv Hunter was already, he and I were on together. Jack Underwood, I think Guy Harris had hired him. And, of course, Bob was there for a long time doing sports as well as the music.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember who I hired. I think we had a pretty stable there. They were there for a long time.
Well, I kind of interrupted you after you were talking about Jane Weston. The rest of the lineup throughout the day was Bob Chase in the afternoons, is that right?
After I got finished with Jane Weston, I think I was on until noon, wasn't I? And then Bob Chase went on, and then Marv Hunter was late night. And who was in the after Bob Chase? Oh, Don Chevalet from South Bend was in there somewhere, mm-hmm. too.
When you made that switch to rock and roll music, what sort of reaction did you get from the audience? Because I would think certainly some of the older demographics might have been a little upset.
Well, I'm sure we had letters. We had calls about, what are you doing to my station? We dropped the network affiliation and did it on our own. And there are these people who have been listening to soap operas all day. All of a sudden, we're playing music and then rock and roll music to boot. We had some bad write-ups in the local papers about it, too, because this great station, whoa, what are they doing to us, sort of thing. And then all of a sudden, I guess the kids took over the radios at home, and we became quite popular.
Was that decision, or do you know who made that decision? Was that Carl Vandegrift who decided to do it, or was that a decision made by Westinghouse?
I would imagine our program manager, Guy Harris, at the time, together with Carl. We've got to do some changing here. We're losing it. The people aren't listening to the radio anymore for soap operas and that sort of thing. And I'm guessing, nobody told me, but I'm guessing they made a pitch to headquarters, and headquarters said, go ahead, we're doing it all over the country anyway.
Any other memories about those early days when they were doing rock and roll music?
You know, it's hard for me to go back because I enjoyed radio in so many different ways. And I enjoyed being a disc jockey and being a program manager. I just had a great time.
What do you think it was that made WoWo such a huge success? Because there were very few radio stations in the entire country that had the dominant position that WoWo did.
Well, I think of the coverage area, 82 counties, number one.
Yeah.
Plus, you have somebody like Jay Gould and Bob Sievers, who have been on the air there for years, made it a lot easier for us newcomers to get in there and get acquainted and get known around the area. You know, so when you're out there, tell them Jay Gould said to send you, or Bob Sievers, and that all grew from that.
You know, I think it says a lot for Bob Sievers that he had been at the radio station for, I guess, 20 years or so at that time when they made the switch to rock and roll music, that he was able to keep up with the times and integrate his performance into that format and still be at least as successful as he was before that.
Oh, yeah.
I would think a lot of morning men probably had a difficult time with that transition.
Well, he did. Kind of difficult for all of us, going from what the music we were doing, or the lack of doing any music at all of a sudden we had to play this god-awful rock and roll coming along. And then all of a sudden Bill Haley came, and that was the rest of the story.
Was there a playbook to know what to do when you were first doing that, or did you listen to tapes of other stations, or how?
No, we kind of took a billboard. Is it Billboard? I think it was Billboard.
Yeah.
That we got all the listings of number one records around the country. And then, of course, Sam DeVincent would go out and get those records. In fact, you didn't really have to get them once they started. The record people were sending them to us by the dozen every day, so it was not a problem.
Do you have any Bob Sievers stories that you'd like to share?
Oh, let's see, Bob Sievers. Yes, to me, it was a wonderful story. I was program manager at the time. And fortunately or unfortunately, I lived about 10 minutes from the radio station. And I can remember one morning the phone rang. It must have been about 4 o'clock, and the engineer said, Cal, Bob checked in, but we haven't heard from him since. I said, oh, my gosh, I'll be right down. And on the way down, before I got there, I had the radio turned on, and I heard this, good morning, this is Bob Sievers. He had been at a record hop the night before and fell asleep while he was getting set to go on the air that morning. So by the time I got there, he was on the air, but barely.
Describe what it was like in those days, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s, as far as what the disc jockey did. Was a disc jockey actually queuing up records, or did he only speak into the mic and had engineers to do other things?
Oh, no, we queued our own records. And then, of course, we got cassettes later on, and we put our own cassettes in and played them.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any engineers as such with us. We had, of course, out of the transmitter and in the control room.
Yeah.
But, no, we didn't have any engineers working with us.
What did the engineer in the control room do?
Oh, he looked through the window and made sure everything was going okay and made sure the tape machines were working that were in the control room in addition to the ones we had. I think we had one guy on duty all day or, you know, at one time.
What were some of the promotions that you remember at WoWo? Because there were so many.
Well, the big one was the Jay Gould Penny Pitch for the island down in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Penny Pitch every year at Christmas time. That's all we talked about was get those pennies in. We were serving Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. I think we had 82 counties in our coverage area, so we were always out. They didn't give it to me, but at one time in my life there, I was the man on the go going around doing interviews and putting them on tape, bringing them back and using them within the various shows. And I had a 1955 Thunderbird with, you know, the top down all painted up with WoWo and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I was constantly going around to county fairs and different events in these counties, getting a little bit on tape, and then we would put them somewhere into the programs that we were doing.
You were probably hauling around a pretty big tape recorder in those days, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a big one. Yeah, you're right about that.
When did the WoWo record hops begin?
The record hops began shortly after we became disc jockeys. And that went on for a long time. I can remember we had a weekly one up at Bledsoe's Beach, which was about 40 miles north. I think that was part of breaking us in as a music station. And they went on and on and on. We all were out going all over the neighborhood, and not only the neighborhood, but the whole 82 counties doing record hops. I think we got $25 a night to do that, something like that.
At that time, that wasn't too bad, I guess.
It wasn't bad, but we had to buy our own gas, I think. I'm not sure. I'm kidding about that. I don't know that. I can't remember that.
Were you there at the time that WoWo actually went to 50,000 watts, or was that before you?
No, that's a good question.
I think that was 1954. Did they have a big ceremony?
There was some sort of a big ceremony. Of course, our company president, Don McGannon, was out, and I think he had all the managers from the various Westinghouse stations in, and there was some sort of a big reception or a big dinner in town making the announcement and entertaining the local politicians.
That was certainly an oddity for a city the size of Fort Wayne to get a 50,000-watt license, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I still can't understand how they pulled that off, but they pulled it off. And as I said, 82 counties. There was a lot of territory. I mean, the WoWo call letters, we went way south at nighttime, you know. We're down into Florida with that signal.
Yeah.
And we're getting mail and calls from all over. It was fun, but sometimes it got a little hectic.
What else can you think of that we should talk about? Because I'm sure there's so many things.
Well, you're right, there were so many things. Oh, of course, we were there when President Kennedy was assassinated. That was a horrendous day.
Yeah, tell me about that. What was that like? How did you find out? What did you do as far as a radio station on that day?
Well, our news director, Al Cessna, I don't know if I was on the air in my office, but said, hey, they got a problem down in Dallas with the president. We all went back to watch the machines. And sure enough, well, you know that, he was assassinated. So what do we do about that? So I said, well, we better get going and set up something at a church and do music and that sort of thing and make it a reverent thing. And so we made an arrangement to go out to one of the churches and set up our equipment and kind of do a solemn thing for, I think, a whole day at least that mm-hmm. We were doing this, forgetting the rock and roll music and going a whole different way, almost an all-news station at the time. I left Fort Wayne in 64 and went to Philadelphia to KYW, and from there went to San Francisco to KPIX, and then from there up to Sacramento for a couple of stations. So I kind of lost track of what was going on, but thank goodness for Bob. He talked to me for quite a bit. We talked to each other every once in a while.
Yeah, you keep in touch with... That's amazing in itself, I think, is that you and Bob Chase have stayed in touch through all these decades.
Yeah, well, we're about the same age, I think, and... We went through this transformation at WoWo together, and I went to many of his hockey games, didn't do any broadcasting, but went to see some of the games. Yeah, we were pretty close. Families close. Mm-hmm. We used to have celebrations on the Memorial Day when we had big picnics with the Chases. Yeah.
Cal Stewart, or Cal Bullwinkle, thank you for joining us. We have some mutual acquaintances. I had the pleasure to work with Jack Underwood and Bob Seavers, so through the years, we had mutual friends and didn't even know it.
Isn't that something? That's the way it goes.
Well, thanks again for your time, Cal.
Oh, you're welcome, Randy. Thank you.